Daily Talk Show, episode 308.
How are we?
Cyan Taid is in the building. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's funny to finally be on here after so much time of listening.
Yeah, have you watched? Because it's a different, it looks like a different thing, like it's a different world.
I've listened on Apple Podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now you've transported into our set here.
I have. It's very professional.
Have you given us 5 stars yet or no?
I haven't. No, that's okay. I'm sorry. I'll do that when I get home. No, you're like an Uber driver, Josh.
Always wanting the 5 stars.
No, that's okay. Yeah, it is a little bit needy, isn't it? I feel like I can be needy with you.
Yeah, you can be. We know each other well enough.
Yeah, exactly. TJ, Cyan Taid. What do you know of Cyan?
Well, other than how you speak so highly of Envato and the times I've spent in Envato, which I've never seen you there, but you are one of the founders alongside your husband and a friend. Mm-hmm. And I went down a rabbit hole last night of watching some of your old videos, the moments of when you first started this. And it's interesting to sort of understand where you guys are at now. I used Envato before I even knew Josh.
Mm-hmm.
I was downloading some music and all that stuff. But then sort of to see the journey you've gone on, you wouldn't know. I mean, you're seeing this online business, but you're not sort of getting a gauge of that. And I really did. I hope today we can explore a bunch of that stuff, which it's so crazy where you've come from the garage of starting Envato. Josh and I were speaking yesterday about where we're at on our journey, which is the very start, and there's a time where we're like, we're a bit embarrassed about where we're at, but we know where we want to go.
I made TJ light a candle before you came into the office because I just said, the office fucking stinks. The aircon doesn't work very well. We're having Cyan over.
It was either light the candle or blame it on Mr. 97.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
It doesn't smell at all in here, okay, to be clear. Great. And I actually came in and I was like, wow, this is a cool space.
Oh, great. Yeah. It's got it leans towards grunge Collingwood. But that's all we can hope for, I guess.
See, the interesting thing in watching Josh's journey is I just feel like he's gotten cooler and cooler as he's gotten older. He's found his personal style. He's just
basic. It's very basic, the style, though. It's just like keeping it very minimal.
You're just super cool these days. Whereas I feel like you were cool when I met you, personality wise, but your personal style, you weren't as like comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah, I think comfort definitely. How much have you felt that you've developed from a style point of view and just a comfort of being yourself?
Me?
Yeah.
I think I felt like for a long time, because Envato was growing really quickly and you needed to manage all these people and you needed to seem like you knew what you were doing, that I often felt like I had to kind of play a role as opposed to just being me.
Yeah.
And so as I get older, I'm trying to just be me more. And Collis always said to me, like, I'd get super stressed out before I'd go do like hard panels or speaking engagements with intimidating people.
Mm-hmm. You're on a hard panel today, by the way.
I am on a hard panel, yeah.
The hardest panel.
It's got the panel vibe, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And Collis was always saying to me, it's okay if you don't know anything. You can only be you. It's okay if you don't know everything. Probably if I didn't know anything, it would be a problem. But it's okay if you don't know everything. You can only be you, and it's all right to have strengths and it's all right to have weaknesses. So I feel like I've gotten more comfortable with that as time's gone on.
I heard a great line recently, hindsight is crystal clear. And so, you know, where you're at now, looking back to that time of in the garage, it's like we're in the garage essentially. But how much difference in where your thinking is at now versus then? Has there been a heap of shifting, or is it, you know, that still same person from the garage with your hubby and a best mate?
No, I feel like I'm a completely different person. Yeah. And to be clear, our garage was a lot less impressive than this is. This is way more impressive. Look, I think you really evolve a lot over time. And I think what's interesting about entrepreneurship or about what, you know, about in its broader sense, so I would count what the two of you are doing as entrepreneurship. What's interesting about it is that you grow and you change and you evolve very quickly. It's like accelerated learning. And it is kind of like, all right, well, really the exercise is I'm trying to solve these really meaty, difficult problems to solve. I'm going to stretch myself to my absolute limit in order to see if I can actually do it or not. Along the way, you learn a lot about yourself.
I mean, you've lost the hat, Josh. I saw in some of the videos that you made when you worked in Vardo with Cy, you had your backwards cap on.
Yeah, I think I was going through a stage of – well, I think my hair – like we were mentioning before the show about my hair –
Is this slipping into a hair segment?
It's got that vibe, but you know, like we've got insecurities. For me, my insecurities in my hair, in my scalp. I think I've got a very sort of D-grade scalp.
D-grade scalp?
Yeah.
What's an A-grade scalp, just to be clear?
I think, Tommy, you've got a very good amount of hair. I think that if you cut it more, because Tommy's got a mullet at the moment.
Well, I'm growing a full man bun, so it's just at a point where it's just, it's very annoying.
Can you show what it's looking like at the moment? Show the back.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, so the bag, it's
a real party up the back there. I can nearly put
it
back.
Could be worse, is what Sian said. There's a.
It can always be worse.
Yeah, no, it's not.
It could be worse. Look at this. And so, so I think that definitely I was self-conscious about my scalp and my, and so I would wear a hat.
Yeah.
The problem is that it feels like it's even a hat is even worse because then it doesn't have time to breathe and it just gets.
Are you worried about your scalp or are you worried about the fact that you're balding?
A bit of both. No, actually, the balding doesn't bother me at all.
Okay.
I'd prefer to completely shave. At the end of the Envato trip that I did, I shaved all my hair and Bree was like not happy about
it. Oh, really? Because I love it.
Yeah,
so shaved hair. Love a shaved head.
Well, your hubby has a shaved head.
Collis has got a shaved head. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
All the shaved head men.
Jeff Bezos. You're a big Jeff Bezos fan? Is that what you're saying?
No, like Bruce Willis and The Rock and, you know, shaved heads. I like a shaved head.
Yeah, sure.
And I have a theory. Men with shaved heads really like me because I have a lot of hair. So I have a theory. It's like this subconscious trying to kind of even out the, like, gene pool.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's even plays into like I lack eyebrows.
Do you like women with big eyebrows?
Yeah, exactly. So maybe that's part of it too is like, yeah, someone who doesn't have much of a brow. That's what even like Mr. 97, who we've had, he's been on the dating scene and all that sort of thing. I've been picking people where I'm like, oh, I think she'd be great for you and all that sort of thing. But in some cases, maybe I think that maybe Mason looks too much like that. Like he'll be like not as into one person or another person, and maybe we're attracted to like the opposites.
I think so. We all have our types.
Yeah. Mm. What do you think, 97? Mm-hmm. I've wanted to spring his dating session early.
Mason's Mr. 97. He's got bamboo hair. That's not going anywhere.
Yeah, it's good. It's a thick.
What do you mean bamboo hair?
Like you should see it. Like we've realized it could could perm that and it could go up into just. Afro.
Yeah.
Anyway. That's what he's got. That's what he's equipped with over there.
Anyway, moving on from the hair stuff, because I know we could spend a lot of time on it. Sydney versus Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
You were living, like when it all started, you were living in Sydney.
Yep.
Why did you decide to go to Melbourne? And do you ever have, I feel like friends who did the move from Sydney to Melbourne, they sort of spend a lot of their life, especially in winter, complaining about I should be in Sydney right now. Do you have that relationship?
I miss the weather and the beaches. I really do. Mm-hmm. Everything else, and obviously my family and my good friends, but everything else I love about, I think Melbourne's a far superior city. I think it's a friendlier city.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. People in Melbourne are friendlier than they are in Sydney. People in Sydney are lovely, but there's just a warmth that you get from strangers in Melbourne that I've just noticed you don't get in Sydney. And I think in Melbourne, what I really love about it is that it's cool to care. It's cool to be obsessive about what you do, which I don't think is cool in Sydney.
Yeah.
I think in Sydney it's a bit less about you don't want to try too hard in Sydney.
Mm-hmm. I would definitely not go well in Sydney.
Me neither. My wife's from Sydney. I grew up here. I moved up to Sydney. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's a place that like Atlassian, the founder, lives there. It's, it has a feel about it like New York or London, like big city. What, from a business point of view, Melbourne, what's the advantages of having the company run out of Melbourne?
Well, look, I think, you know, we ended up in Melbourne by accident. So we had this amazing dev we were working with at the beginning of Envato to build it. And then he moved back to Melbourne while we were travelling overseas. So after Envato kind of turned into kind of being able to pay our salary, we travelled for 18 months and worked on it while we travelled, which was really fun. But in the meantime, this dev, he moved back to Melbourne to be closer to his family. And then he was like, oh, I kind of need some help. And we're like, well, why don't you just hire one of your friends?
Yeah.
Kind of need a bit more help. Hire another one of your friends. And then we got a phone call going, look, you've got an office in Melbourne. Can you come back? You probably should be here to run this thing. So we came back and we thought, well, we'll settle here for now. It'll be a fun adventure. And now we've got two businesses here and our kids are in school and we're here. Yeah. It's just we didn't think it through. I'm glad it worked out, but we really did not think through the gravity of that decision.
Yeah.
Did the first employee, the actual jump of paying someone's like salary, super, all of that sort of stuff, was that a big decision? Did it feel like one at the time?
No, we just needed help. We couldn't build. We couldn't build. You know, back then it was our first product was Flashden, which was a terrible name.
Did Adobe actually send a cease and desist, or what was the? Because it changed from Flashden to ActiveDen. So you sold Flash assets. Mm-hmm. What was the catalyst for changing the name?
Adobe sent a cease and desist.
Yeah.
But even look, it was a terrible brand name. It was a shocking brand name. And I remember I have this memory of, you know, having this check to Flashden and going into the bank and the teller going, Flashden, what is it you do? And I said, oh, we have an online business. And she thought it was a porn site. She go, Flashden.
Yeah. And he said, a Flashden. Yeah, it's got a den as well.
Yeah.
A den just a sounds den. Filthy.
It sounds so dodgy. Yeah, yeah, she looked at me like she was appalled by me. And I didn't quite know how to explain it. And it was super awkward. But, you know, I've gotten a bit better at branding over time. But, yeah it was not a great brand name.
It feels like... You and Collis are very understated with, you know, the amount of success you've had versus how you walk in the world. You're not super flashy.
From a brand level, like that's when I went on that rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. That's where I was like seeing the scale of how many people you've, you know, shared money with, you know, that your business has allowed people to flourish in their worlds, or in their lives around the world. Like that's the understated part that, I mean, I don't know how much you're wanting to just shout that around. I think... You probably wouldn't.
I would.
I know you absolutely would.
Like as soon as that happens. But the thing is, I feel like I've changed perspectives based on. I just remember once we were hanging out, and then I'm like, okay, I'm off, and then I was like waiting for my Uber, and you were like going off to the tram. It just gave like a real perspective into what maybe I should be.
Dude, when was the last time you were on a tram?
Trams just give me anxiety, so I just sort of avoid them. I like the sound of trams. I like being outside of, like, at where we live now near Smith Street, you can hear the trams drive, like, going past at night. It sounds awesome. And I hear, like, the beep, 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 like all the closing doors and stuff. But the idea of being in it and just, like, understanding the routes, I think if I understood the routes. Do you still use the tram?
Yeah, I take the train to and from work every day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, yeah, I think that's great.
I sometimes get the bus up to where we are. It's just one bus.
When have you taken the bus to here? When? You drive every day.
The other week. I legit got here the other week.
And now you're flexing.
And then I was doing it quite a bit before we started our business.
Mr. 97 catches the bus every day. Yeah. So if anyone's getting the prize, it should be Mr. 97. But have you ever had, I feel like one of the benefits of being understated is when you want to flex, it counts. So someone, like in a situation where people care about that thing, like they care about status, they care about success, entrepreneurship, have there been any moments where someone's treated you like a bit of shit or whatever, and then even though it's uncomfortable to do because you don't want to have your value in that, but you've been able to flex it and made them like be like, haha, don't think about that shit, because like have you had moments
you need
of that?
To pay attention to me now. Yeah, like, you know, you do have situations where people maybe aren't being that nice. I mean, you and I had a situation once where we were trying to hire an advertising agency and they kept on talking. You were sitting at the head of the table just randomly and they kept on pitching to you.
It was not random.
Not to me.
He did it on purpose. It was a power play from Josh.
Power move by me. Just a real presence. Maybe it was the snapback hat that got them.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Throughout the whole meeting, the guy who's working for the lead guy is going like, you know, like... Talk to her. She's the boss of this project.
I've got no money.
and he just couldn't stop pitching to you because you were a guy at the table, even though you're so much younger than me. And he knew logically that I was the person who was the decision maker. Just emotionally, he was like,
"Do you think it's unconscious to him?"
No, totally unconscious. I don't think he intentionally did it at all.
Yeah,
but
I think he was wearing. I think what I remember of him, he was wearing one of those hats like that my pa used to wear, which I really respect. You know those?
Yes.
Like, was he wearing one of those
hats?
He was wearing
one of those hats. Yeah. Yes, he was. He was a cool guy.
Yeah.
No, but to answer your question, you know, I did a there's this thing, Lifestyles in Inventory. Mm-hmm. Collis is always teasing me. I say inventory and I just can't stop doing it.
Yeah, so don't
I'm
do
just
that.
Yeah.
Inventory, inventory.
It's just one of those words in my mind, I think, because I learned to spell it that way when I was like young.
Yeah.
Inventory. Anyway,
I say bussiness.
Do you really?
No, vegetables.
No, bus in.
So yeah, it's basically this thing, and it kind of has a spectrum of 8 different qualities you might have and in what percentage in terms of your leadership style.
Yeah.
I'm in fact extremely competitive.
Oh, really?
I'm an extremely competitive human, and I think that because I don't like that about myself, I try very hard not to appear competitive. So I don't tell people about my work stuff because I feel like it kind of would be competitive, which I think is a really unappealing and unpleasant quality that
but,
I have.
But is it more an unpleasant quality to hide it all? Because I do remember...
You need to tell me if it is.
Well, because...
You've got to have a tell.
Well, how about this? My one of my best friends in school, we sort of drifted apart in year 9.
Mm-hmm.
But he would say to me, he's like, oh, yeah, man, I haven't studied for the test at all. Haven't studied, yeah. Man, it's going to be so hard, right? Mm-hmm. And so I would be like, yeah, I haven't studied either, and I wouldn't study. Mm-hmm. And then he would end up getting an A and I would get like a C.
Because he secretly studied.
Because he was secretly studying. And not only that, but he also had – him and I were both fat kids and we both had weight issues. And when we would go – when I would go to his house and stay over, he would give me soft drink and then he wouldn't drink any.
Well, that's just frenemy territory.
Yeah,
that's
it does
not
have
like,
that vibe.
I don't feel like that's the same. I would never do that to someone. Yeah. But –
So how? What I mean, is? What's? How do you?
I do send a lot of chocolate home for you.
Yeah. It's all coming out. It's
yeah.
Well, people don't probably understand the chocolate thing. If you're new to Cyan, Hey Tiger. Well, they probably know the brand Hey Tiger if you're in Melbourne. But how did you go from having Envato, one of the biggest online digital marketplaces, to deciding to be a chocolate pusher?
So I'd been doing Envato for 14 years and while it was still really interesting and I still, you know, enjoyed it a great deal and feel very attached to it, what you do day to day in a company of, you know, 500 people plus is very different to what you do in a startup.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, doing a lot of things which were interesting from a point of view of can I do this? It's challenging and it's, you know, useful for the business, but it wasn't stuff that I was like, oh, I love this. I love early stage startup. I find that really interesting. I love things which are visually creative and exciting.
What feels like early stage for you? Like when I came into the business, that would have been, what, 2013 or something, around that time.
Mm-hmm.
How did that – you were – I think there were – you were hiring 70 new roles. It was the – you had just moved into the new King Street office. Where did that feel like to you in regards to startup phase?
I still felt like that was a bit scrappy, which I think I find a bit scrappy interesting that you've just got to kind of figure that out. You can't hire specialists for everything. So the stuff you and I did together, we did heaps of stuff together at Envato, which was really, I'd be like, all right, we've just got to figure this out.
Yeah.
And
I enjoyed
fun
that
to
too,
figure
right?
it out.
Because it's also
you're
treating.
Very good at that.
Well, I think it treats employees like they're, like I felt like it was my business. Like I was able to like hustle with things and make things happen and make decisions and move quickly. And I think that it was all of a sudden you have so much more of a vested interest when you're doing it that
you're
way.
You're very entrepreneurial though.
Mm.
You're very entrepreneurial. So people I found either really like working for me because they're very entrepreneurial and I give them a space to be really like that or they want to know exactly what they have to do every day and then they hate working for me.
Yeah. So how did you get to Hey Tiger? So
oh, sorry.
No, that was me. We go everywhere.
So what I you know, so Envato, the core value is when the community succeeds, we succeed. There's a really heavy focus on impact. So the focus in the business is less on revenue for the business itself and although, you know, you need to pay attention to that.
Yeah.
But in terms of what our focus is, it's how can we get to $1 billion of community earnings on our marketplace? And we're getting, you know, that should be fairly soon that we get there, which is really exciting. So the focus really is around the community, impacting the community, which I find really exciting. Mm-hmm. I also think that there's a, you know, a lot of people say don't talk about luck with, you know, business success and yada yada. And I agree with that. You've got to make your own luck. But also, I've seen so many startup founders now where the market just hasn't gone their way, a big competitor came to get them, whatever it might be. The fact that we were able to bootstrap Invato, get it to the point where it was large enough that it was first to market in a variety of different areas, and that still to this day no big competitor has come after us, is like a one in a billion type of thing that occurred.
Yeah. What does bootstrapped mean to you in regard? What did that actually look like? Is it like pulling your own savings? Is it asking friend, like parents for cash using credit cards? What is the reality of bootstrap?
We did all those things. Mm-hmm. So we used all of our savings and we worked doing freelance every day during business hours, and the evenings and on the weekends we worked on, you know, developing this business. And we borrowed 15K from Collis's parents. Mm-hmm. We maxed out our credit cards and we ended up living in my parents' basement.
How much has the startup culture in today, 2019, changed from, you know, that getting venture capital seems popular right now, and, you know, taking a risk with someone else's money versus doing it yourself? How much has it actually changed from, you know, 14 years
ago? And that seems more glamorous too than what, like, borrowing money off mum and dad and using credit card. Like, that sounds way less sexy than, we've got some, you know, A-series. Well, but the thing is, that's the exact
same
thing.
That's social proof. Yeah. Like, you know, it's great social proof if you get that funding. On the other hand, you are... not to put all VCs in one basket, but you're dealing with people who want a return on investment very quickly, and a commercial return generally is the only focus as opposed to anything else.
14 years ago, was it actually a thing, like a popular thing? Because I'm sure there's, you know, people like Mr. 97, 19 coming out of school going, I need funding, I need VC funding, because they're hearing these people preach about it.
There were a couple of VCs in the US that showed a bit of interest once we were kind of, you know, probably, you know, like kind of getting a little bit bigger, but it really wasn't the same culturally at all. There really wasn't a startup culture. There wasn't a startup community that we were aware of anyway. Anyway, we wouldn't even have known how to get funding or where to get it if we, you know, like if we'd wanted it. And I think you do feel like you can't control everything you're doing once you sort of take someone else's money and they expect to get that money and more back. So we just decided just to sort of keep investing in it. We didn't take a salary for a couple of years. We just kind of really decided just to build it organically, which now, I'm so happy we did that.
Yeah.
But I have to say, there's no way, like it was like the Wild West at that point. Mm-hmm. There was such a huge amount of land to grab. It isn't that way anymore. Anything you want to launch, you're probably dealing with a couple of competitors and you need some more money to do that.
I heard you talk a lot in the videos about holes in the market.
Yeah.
Is there just less holes now, or do we need to be more creative
to find
the holes? Yeah.
I think, I think that, you know, there was just the fact that we were able to be first to market in so many different areas is really saying something in that period of time. There's always going to be plenty of opportunity for somebody who's entrepreneurial. There's, you know, new technology coming along. There's, you know, innovation. When it comes down to it, you're effectively just solving a problem, and generally it's a good idea, you know, to do something which is solving a problem you yourself has experienced, because you're going to be really good at solving that problem because you feel it. But, you know, like I think there's still stuff around, but I do think it's very different in that there's just a lot more players potentially very close to you.
Mm. Do you think that behind every problem there is financial reward? So say for us with the Daily Talk Show, we're trying to build this show up, we're trying to provide something unique. Could we be itching a problem, providing a solution to that problem, but maybe no one's willing to actually like pay for the problem to be fixed?
I think if you're doing really great work and the doing it every day brings you some sort of joy and fulfillment and you can earn a living doing that, then I think that that's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
Nothing, you know, different things are going to scale to a different degree. You might find even that it doesn't have a financial reward, but it really, you know, this sounds really like serious, but almost like an act of service to some degree.
Yeah.
Like you're serving the people around you by providing this thing which entertains them, makes them feel connected, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can go, great, well, anything I do which I really like and do really well is going to make me millions of dollars. But, you know, I think you can, I hope, and I'd love to, I love the concept that you can have a work life which you're passionate about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And do you think that with the direction that you're going and with mm-hmm. where Envato was, is that you restructuring your life? So
or is it Tiger? Or is it the competitive side coming out saying, I need to do this again? Yeah. Like we did it, we've done it all before and now it's like, I want to go out and do it again.
I do think it was intimidating because you do think, well, Envato's nice and comfortable. Yeah. I have, you know...
Josh at the head of the table.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I have, you know, like lack of a better way of putting it, a degree of status from Envato. And if I do something new and it's a flop, boy, that's going to be a bit embarrassing. Yeah. Especially as Collis, you know, first time round, my husband is my co-founder. If Hey Tiger had really like been a bit of an embarrassing disaster, it would have been like, well, you know, we know who the brains of the operation was in that family, even though Collis is, you know, as you know, crazy bright.
That's a lot of pressure. That's almost it's almost like that second album territory.
It feels like
you're Freddie Mercury. You've got Queen.
That is how I think of myself. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Queen, and then you've gone off and doing your solo thing. Yeah. But unlike Queen, Collis was more supportive of your solo venture as well. I'm guessing.
And living Collis a more is pure life supportive. Than Queen.
Yeah, no,
I don't know. Well, Freddie Mercury, I don't know what I get up to in my downtime.
Exactly.
I think that I look back. And even, like, I love Hey Tiger. I love making something for women. I love food. I think it's like art, but it is, you know, you can experience with every one of your senses. I love, I love everything about it. Love the team, love Brie. Yeah. But I do think looking back that I subconsciously chose something which was as far from Envato as I could make it. Mm. So it's a social enterprise. It's not for profit.
Which is there's an alignment there with Envato, which is like helping people, you know, live their lives, being able to support them. What was the was there a clear distinction where you're like, you know, it's great that Envato does that. Mm-hmm. What was the social enterprise bit? Why was that important to you, do you think?
So I think that I find the concept that business can serve community and make things better to be a very exciting and important concept. And I think this focus we have, which is that business success is purely about revenue, is responsible for a huge amount of the crap that's going on in the world.
Yeah.
So social enterprise to me seems like the logical next step where you bring people together to do incredible work. They get paid fairly for the work that they do, so they, you know, they get to earn a livelihood doing work that they are passionate about, and it serves a real need and social purpose within the world. So Hey Tiger funds cocoa farmer community development in an area of Ghana, which has a very high percentage of cocoa farming communities, and these cocoa farmers earn 78 cents per day. Most of these kids are in these communities are growing up stunted, no access to education, you know, very poor nutrition. And back in 2010, the cocoa industry committed to getting the number of children in child labour in West Africa on cocoa plantations down from 2 million children in 2010 to 200,000 by 2020. It's currently sitting at 2.2 million.
Wow,
so
crazy.
It's, you know, there's 2.2 million kids who are my kids' age who are working and some of them in, you know, don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but appalling circumstances.
Yeah.
And something that gives us such great pleasure over here is responsible for just so much crap over there.
So
it's
if it's
just terrible.
70 odd cents or whatever a day, what then, if that's their benchmark they're working to, what's the reframing of it? Is it 5, 10, 50, like $100 a day? Like how do you go from such a low point and understand and reframe the whole situation?
I don't have a – like it is a complex problem to solve and I don't have a totally elegant answer to it. The World Cocoa Barometer, which is kind of a, you know, industry body which brings – a whole bunch of different experts together to analyse how cocoa is going on an impact level, believes that it's going to take much more holistic community development work, which is why we do what we do, because it's not just about the cocoa itself. It's about the fact that cocoa farmers don't have any education. There's a, you know, lack of nutrition. It's really it's tough going, you know, everything from, you know, farming practices are really inefficient because they're farming the way their grandfathers farmed. Mm. And, you know, there's potentially much more efficient things they could be doing, to the fact that, you know, physically they're in very remote locations and these cocoa traders will come and say, look, this is how much I'm offering you, take it or leave it.
Crazy.
Yeah, so hard. What comes first for you? You've got, you know, your next album, you're doing a new business. Mm-hmm. Was that finding a problem? Was that hearing about something like what was happening in Ghana, thinking about what can I do, the idea of the business? Which one is it for you, or is it a blend?
I knew I wanted to do a social enterprise next because I think that's a really interesting thing to do, but I didn't know what it looked like yet. And then Collis and I and the kids actually took a holiday in Hong Kong, and we went to Hong Kong and I was looking at all the chocolate that they have there and I was like, there's so much more in terms of flavour profiles than there is in Australia. It's so interesting and so fun and we're just not seeing it. At the same time, I was looking at trends coming out of the States, food trends, because I'm quite passionate about food and I knew I wanted to do some. I thought I'd kind of like to do something in food next. Also, it's tangible and you can tell people what you do and they understand. Like if I try and talk about Envato, people's eyes just kind of glaze over. You know, we were away and I was looking at trends in the States and I was like, there are brands that are starting to focus on women. Women are the largest demographic of, you know, people who purchase chocolate in Australia. Mm. And yet every other brand that we see is targeted either at your kids or your parents-in-law. Like nobody's kind of making an aspirational chocolate brand that resonates with women. So I was like, this is a totally impractical plan, but I think that there's something in this. But let's just see. I started making chocolate in my kitchen and at the same time I got involved with the Hunger Project, which is this amazing charity that we work with now, in a project in Burkina Faso, which is the third poorest country in the world, bordered by Ghana and the Ivory Coast. And I was talking to the CEO of the Hunger Project, Melanie Noden, one day and she said, well, you know, a big problem in Burkina Faso is forced child trafficking. So these children go work in cocoa plantations in Ghana and the Ivory Coast, taken away from their families, never see them again. Wow. And I thought, oh, that's like it was so jarring that was the impact of this passion that I have for chocolate. And I thought, well, I don't know anything about making food products, but I could smoosh these things together. Hole in the market, impact kind of issue that needs to be solved. Mm. That was me clapping. Yeah.
Between
and I'll continue.
between then and now, what has been the biggest change in your thoughts on things and the way that you approach Hey Tiger?
Food products are really hard. Mm. Things with physical stock, physical product is so much harder than I thought. I think I was kind of a bit cocky in the beginning and thought, oh, you know, I've done something of Envato scale. This should be fine. And I was like, wow, this is really hard. Like infrastructure costs for making something like a physical food product is like a massive investment. So I think I have a lot more respect for the people who've done it.
Well, most people are trying to go the other way. They're going, how can I create something that's not a tangible product? It's an online product. Mm. I can sell it while I sleep. Yep. You know, I don't have to worry about returns. It's like it's fascinating. I mean, that's where I see you, the competitive nature in you. It's like tackling that is no small feat.
Yeah. Well, I think there's something appealing in the tangible as well. Even our podcast, we're like, we need merch. let's do merch.
There's a great pleasure in giving somebody something.
Yeah.
And there's that Greek mama in me comes out and goes, I want to feed you. Yeah. I love you. I want to feed you. And I get to feed everyone. It's great.
It helps that the chocolate's good.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks.
Do you think that we're actually going to have to pay more for chocolate in the future? Do you think it's going to, like, for all these things, who's taking the money? Is there are we doing a disservice by only spending a few bucks at the supermarket on chocolate?
I think if you are buying chocolate which doesn't have some sort of certification attached to it, then you really need to consider the impact that your decisions are making.
Yeah. Do you think about, like, from an issues point of view, you have that as one issue, you have environmental impact on things. Mm-hmm. There's so many different lenses that you can look at. You know, for instance, like cosmetics, if you want to be in the market in China, you have to be testing on animals, like, as part of the process. These things, happen, which then ends up, it seems like, two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back. How do you look at all the different issues? Are you singularly focused, or do you look at sort of a holistic approach of Hey Tiger?
I think that, a business can become a B Corp. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know what a B Corp is, but it's a really holistic kind of analysis of how your business is performing on every ethical level.
It's like a certification, like a standard.
It's like a certification, yeah. You can go through that process even if you don't necessarily want to become a B Corp, just mm-hmm. to see how you're tracking mm-hmm. as a business. So I kind of feel like our job is to get iteratively better. Because, you know, there's plenty of stuff we do which I'm like, oh, well, that's not good enough yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, you go, all right, well, we're just trying. We're trying to tackle this problem. We're trying to put impact first, and just we hope that every few months we just, take one step forward in terms of being a good all-rounder.
Has there been a magnifying glass on you, do you think, from coming from Envato to now doing this?
I certainly think that, generally speaking, if you were to launch a chocolate brand, you'd go, well, maybe I can kind of, do some basic packaging and I'll start selling it in markets and I'll sort of, ease into it in a traditional bootstrappy way. And I couldn't do like that. It just wouldn't have made any sense for me to do that, because it would have been a real like mind trip.
It would also feel irresponsible in regards, if you feel like you know the next five steps, do you use the resources that you have, or do you,
it's a bit of a calculated gamble, but I think, any startup is, whatever you're investing your sort of, your hard-earned cash into to make work, you've got to back yourself to some degree. So I think that, but I did feel like there was a lot of people who were watching to see how it would go, and that, I took quite a strong position on the brand and the flavour profiles, and it was so different and so other. Before I launched it, I thought there's a pretty good possibility people are going to go, what's she been smoking?
Well, this was off the back as well of winning the Telstra Business Women's Business Award.
Yes.
Did you feel, because I feel like through Envato, there was so much time where you were just sort of behind the scenes, and there was sort of an active effort to go out and about and to start actually celebrating Envato. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What did that teach you about the whole process? Because in some regards, it is that mind trip of we're doing our day-to-day stuff, nothing really changes, you're still, grinding away, and then all of a sudden with this slight slant of a PR perspective on things, people all of a sudden care, and also, and part of it's like frustrating. It's like, these guys have been doing this for, at the time, 12 years or whatever. Mm. What's going on? Was that a mind trip for you?
Yeah, it was a massive mind trip. And interestingly enough, most women who go through winning the Telstra Business Women's Awards by the end of the year are burnt out, freaked out in some way, because it's just such an escalation of your personal brand. Like, it really is, like, we've gone through a few awards programs now. It is the most effective in terms of getting your personal brand out by a country mile. It really is. But that also means, you go from being like, well, I've only ever spoken to my team internally before, to, I've been invited to, be on a panel with the CEO of CSIRO and, these other people who I find deeply intimidating. Yeah. And I'm supposed to hold my own here and act like I know what's going on. So you either go, no, or you lean into it and you go, all right, I'm going to see if I can hold my own here.
I saw that one of your slogans, and this was quite a while ago, so it might have changed, excitement and terror means you're on the right track.
I think so, yeah.
It sounds a bit exciting, and also, a level of terror winning those things and then having to do that. Because if it's not your day-to-day, then I could imagine.
It took a lot of kind of energy, and it pushed me way out of my comfort zone. Mm. But again, I always think, if life's about having big experiences, which I think it kind of is, then, if you get the opportunity, go do it.
How do you actually cope? Because I feel like for a lot of people doing what you've done at like 1/10 of the scale would scare them and all that sort of thing.
Josh.
And then, so to think of where you've gone, is there a level of trauma that you go through? I just wanted to, like, because the thing is, like, there's people who are dealing with way, like, I feel like I deal way less and I get stressed and all that sort of thing. And, you know, like, what's your take on mental health? Mm-hmm. How you, even when you get to the level that you're at, do you all of a sudden, like, I feel like if I got to that level, it's like, okay, at that point I need to see a psychologist. Like, I feel like now I need to deal with all my shit because otherwise
I have seen a psychologist. Yeah. I have seen a psychologist. I did for probably about 9 months just before Hey Tiger launched to the sort of, you know, like just like a few months in. Mm-hmm.
Are these breaking points? Because is that you saying, Josh, I'd get to that and it'd be a breaking point so I need to?
Well,
or
it feels like... Say if something bad happens now, I don't have enough moving parts in my life or anything to really fuck up. Like the worst thing is that Tommy and I have a blow up or something like that, but it's temporary.
And Mr. 97 takes my spot.
Yeah, Mr. 97 has it, cries or whatever.
I'd be sad and happy.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah. But so, yeah, I guess part of it is it's like when you're moving at the faster pace, it feels like when you hit a wall, there's more fatalities potentially. So what was that experience?
I think I've sometimes hit a wall in terms of just how much I feel I can cope with growing really fast. Mm-hmm. So being out of my comfort zone most of the time, which I am, like most of the time I'm like, oh, I don't quite know if I know what I'm doing here, but I'm going to like give it a good crack. And you generally, I think you're always a bit more capable than you think you are. But I have had times when I've just gone, it's just too much now. Mm-hmm. And what I generally find is that something in my body gives out when that happens.
Do you
so
think
something will happen physically.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I feel like maybe even like with my back issues, like that flares up or whatever when I'm like stressed. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that, is there a level of, because I feel like so much of my stress is self-imposed. And so part of like when you're building something, because the thing is you could probably like, you could live a great life right now and just like do whatever and be pretty chill, and you don't have to be doing all the amazing things that you're doing. You could like reduce stress. What do you think it is internally, your mindset to be like, rather than cashing in and being on a yacht somewhere, which doesn't feel like you anyway, but what your version of that, why is it this, you know, this approach, which is starting another business, going through all the things that happens when you start one?
You've got to do something useful with yourself, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
If you feel like you can do something that's interesting and is going to help you grow and is going to kind of help in some way, in no matter what way, and you want to contribute, like, I mean, I feel like you just stop as a human if you just decide, well, now I'm just going to chill out. Like, what's the purpose?
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to have a purpose which is beyond your enjoyment.
Yeah. What's your purpose, do you think?
I think that, you know, on a personal level, it's...
We have a motorcycle.
Yeah, that's really loud.
Shop downstairs. They very rarely actually start the car.
They're really testing
the engine.
That's fine. That's okay.
So I've come to the conclusion that for me, the purpose of life is to have, you know, as many big interesting experiences as I can have, see where I can take things, see how far I can push myself. And the other side of it is to try and leave the world just a tiny weeny bit of a better place, which sounds really cheesy, but I honestly believe it's true. I believe that, you know, there's a quote, I think it's Maya Angelou, which is, you know, service is the rent that we pay for living, which I think, you know, I believe is true. And I also believe that, you know, the greater the sort of the more things that you are given, the more responsibility you have to do useful stuff with it.
I'm going to tell my landlord that and stop paying rent ASAP. No, my landlord actually is one of your employees.
Works in Nevada.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I was always wondering, what the hell is this guy always home and not – what does he do? Turns out that he's really utilizing the work at home, work remotely.
Oh, interesting.
He doesn't
move to Perth.
He moved over there now.
Yeah.
But that was one of the –
just trying to think
about it.
Is
it Mark?
Yeah, it's Mark.
Mark. One of the Marks.
Don't worry, we'll talk about it later. Yeah.
Which Mark? No. I want to know which Mark.
I temporarily forgot what we were doing here.
We're playing guess who. Brown hair.
Taekwondo, I think.
Oh, really?
Can fight.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I love that guy. Yeah, okay.
So Tommy was living above in another apartment.
Yeah.
And then they saw him moving out. And classic, like, Tommy style.
Yeah.
What are you guys
actually
doing?
She sent Amy down for that one.
Oh, really?
Actually, no, she was like, I'm going down. And I was like, yes, thank you. I didn't want to. And then we said, can we take your place?
Yeah,
and now
so
we have it.
So
it, but I always saw him wearing the T-shirts, and so it all made sense.
Mm-hmm. All came together.
He's one of my he's a good guy.
He's great.
Your landlord's great.
Starting the business, the vision that you have, like now I love how I hear you articulate this vision you have and why you do it. How different is it from the early stages?
The early stages of Hey Tiger or the early stages of Invato?
I guess of you as a person and the business and the partnerships you've got.
Do you feel socially like I've changed a lot, Josh?
No, but I feel like I think that you, like in some regard, like I think that you, there's the core values that you have and then it's amplified. The thing is that I feel like part of it is, mate, I feel like you've got more, you feel more socially responsible, or like you are more of a public figure now. When we were working, it feels like it was a lot more sort of, people wouldn't know Invato. Mm. It was like pretty chill.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And so I guess that's probably, I mean, I just like, I feel like you are very kind. You like, I just remember like work, like always feeling calm at work. I remember it got to a point though where it was like too calm, because when I was doing the social media stuff and I was like a little bit stressed, and I said to Sai, I was like, I can't work out like a like my one job was social media, right? Like that's at the time, that's my one job. I said to Sai, I was like, I can't think of like a post today. And Sai just like leant over and she said, it's okay if you can't think of a post today, just don't post. And that was my one job with social media. But I feel that you've gotten, I think you've also developed in regards to people as well, where it's like having empathy or having that tone, you can't actually do that with so many. You can't do that with people and expect like great results. So I feel like you've developed this great empathy versus expectations and all this sort of stuff.
The thing is that I won't actually work with people who I don't think are eminently capable.
Yeah.
So if I don't think you're eminently capable, you're gone really quickly. Yeah. Like in total honesty, you just, you are.
Yeah. How long were you there for, Josh?
2.5 years. Yeah,
and he left. I'm sorry, I'm kicking in. Yeah, so, you know, that's the honest truth of it. And because I'm not good at, you know, having, I'm not good at writing people's tales because I don't want to. Yeah. And I'm always like, well, if you feel you can't today, then I'm sure you're thinking about how are you going to do it better tomorrow? Yeah. So I better just leave you to it. It's because I respected you that I was like, well, there's no point me having that conversation with you. If you're there, if you'd said to me, hey, Sai, can you help me figure out how to do this? Mm-hmm. I would have gone, all right, let's sit down together and let's figure it out together. But you're so capable and you're so smart. I was just like, well, clearly he's on it. Like a post today isn't going to make any difference and it's going to lead to something better. Well,
it was a strategy thing too, right? Mm. So I was like thinking, I was probably like over-engineering everything, trying to work out exactly that post felt like it was an important thing. Do you think that people, there's some people that freak out with that autonomy or that respect that they're just not used to experiencing?
I did have, there's a guy at work at Hey Tiger who once said to me, Sai, I wish you'd just scream at me. It'd be so much easier. There was a big stuff up and he was like, I wish you'd just have a go at me. It would make me feel better. Yeah. And I was like, look, you know, you are beating yourself up more than I would ever be able to beat you up externally. And the fact of the matter is that if I'm dealing with somebody who is going to pass the buck or not beat themselves up when something goes that wrong, then I'm not working with the right person anyway.
Mm-hmm. The new model of work or business of working for somebody, I think, has a lot more autonomy in there. And I found that, and I'd love to know what you think, can you teach someone to be autonomous? Or do you think it's like initiative? Can you teach someone to have initiative?
I think it all comes down from the person's intention and what they want. No, I don't think that if somebody's like, I just want to do my job and go home, that I can sit them down and go, hey, you should be ambitious and you should be thinking outside the box and you should be doing all these things, because that comes from, you know, that comes in internally. If somebody's asking me, if somebody wants to be that way, if they're like, I, you know, I want to get big stuff done and I want to be effective and I, you know, that to me counts for like 80% of it, and then you can sit them down and you can talk to them about how and coach them through it. But generally people have got that in them. They just need some tools to think in the right way. But if the intention's not there, if they don't want to do it, then there's, you know. And it's also okay if they don't want to do it. Different people go through different phases. Sometimes you're all gung-ho in your career. Like, I think probably the three of us are all the time, but, you know, and probably I
like
you as well.
I like that you've aligned us with you. We'll take it. Yeah, we'll use that as a graph.
But, you know, and some people are just in a phase of their life where I'm like, well, there's other stuff that interests me, or I'm in a new relationship, or I want to have children, or whatever it might be. And right now I just want a career which is a bit more set and forget, bring in the money. There's and that's okay too.
Are they in existence? Like, is that a thing now? Like, moving forward, I could imagine it's becoming more about being autonomous and flexibility, but you need to get your stuff done. We can't be micromanaging you. Like, think about your kids, and I think about my son. What's it going to look like for him? What do you think?
So when I did this panel with the CEO of CSIRO and Australia's chief scientist.
They're the blokes that made Wi-Fi, right? CSIRO?
Maybe GPS as well.
No, somewhere over in Adelaide.
Could have that completely wrong.
Yeah, great. Look it up. I don't know.
Was this one of the early panels that you
did? This was one of
the trauma panels?
This was like a full-on trauma panel. Yeah. I was so scared.
Was it those things?
Sorry, guys, I'm just getting a nod from Mr. 97. What was the actual correct.
You were correct.
Yeah, they figured out Wi-Fi along with AeroGuard.
AeroGuard. AeroGuard gives me a bit of asthma.
But very useful for malaria, I'm sure, in developing countries.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is. But yeah. So maybe I'm not the only target market. I get it.
It's not all about you, Josh. Exactly.
Yeah, that's almost the, online marketplace and tiger and chocolate.
It's two very different things. Yeah. And so, what happened in the panel? What did they ask?
Oh, so the discussion was that basically, you know, there's going to be, I can't remember the exact stat now, but something like 40% of job loss from automation in the next 15 years. And that a huge amount of, you know, jobs which are considered those kind of where, like, I clock in and I clock out and during the day I do my thing are just going to disappear very quickly. And the conversation was, is this something we should be concerned about in Australia or is it not? And, of course, I'm sitting there saying, well, I think we should be deeply concerned and we should be starting to think about this in school and we should even be starting to look at how we would implement a universal basic income because that might become necessary given that so many jobs are going to be, you know, like going away. Mm-hmm. And, of course, these two guys were saying, no, everything's fine. She's wrong. You don't need to worry. The government has it in hand. And I was thinking, imposter syndrome, I've read this research. I feel like, you know, this is coming and it's a real, like, imminent danger. It's really strange they're taking this position. Then I realised, oh, my goodness, they're on the government payroll. Of course they're taking this position. They don't want to go, yes, everyone panic. We don't know what we're doing.
They've been sniffing AeroGuard.
They also got free Wi-Fi.
Exactly.
Wow. And in that moment, what do you do? Like, you go, did you back yourself?
I backed myself, yeah. I just kept on arguing my point.
Yeah.
I decided, well, all I can – I came to the conclusion they got me on here for my opinion and so all I can do is give my opinion.
It feels like a shift, though, in how you've developed as a person. Do you think that you have developed confidence? And
yes.
Where has that come from?
Practice. Time and practice and – a couple of times where I tried to pretend, I think I've had to get a lot better at kind of knowing where I'm confident and what I can speak to with authority and what I don't know what I'm actually talking about, because I think I used to think that I needed to be this all-rounder who knew everything. So if I, you know, like, so I was on a Fin Review panel in front of like 300 journalists, and again, stressed, like, you know, way out of my comfort zone type stuff, because you're like, if I say something stupid, every single journalist can write about it in this room. Yeah. But during that discussion, the journalist who was interviewing me said, you know, and what do you think about this this new law that's going to be put in around listed companies? And I just had no idea. Like, Envato's not listed. Mm-hmm. It's not something that interests me. I have no idea. And in the past, I would have gone, oh my goodness, panic stations. I don't know. Everyone's going to think I'm stupid.
Yeah, start saying words.
Yes.
We talked about this literally yesterday where it was like, a client's come to us and said, you know, given Tommy a big sort of offer in regards to what we can do, and they're like, we need an answer now.
Yeah.
And I guess the part of the growth is being like, oh, it's okay to say, I'm going to have to think about this. Yeah. We'll come back to you on that.
And it's perfectly fine. And I realised I'd heard sort of a woman in another panel that I'd been on who'd gone, oh, I'm not sure. You know, and it
it's
was
a power
okay.
move though as totally. Well. It's such a good power because the thing is, it's like it's a confidence in that's not the area that I play in. I don't really know that sort of thing, which is and like it, super powerful.
It strengthens you.
Yeah,
it's just like being fully aware of what your own strengths and weaknesses are, which I think is also very, very important. You know, you've got to know what you're really good at in order to know what you're weak at. And once you know those things, you can go, well, no, actually, I am damn strong here. So, yeah, it was to be able to feel that I developed enough to say, you know what, we're not listed. I have no interest in this. You know, I'm sorry, you're going to need to ask someone else.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she was like, oh, okay. We moved on to the next topic. I was like, that was okay.
That was good.
Doesn't mean I'm dumb. Yeah. Just means that I'm not actually interested or know about this specific area.
And you're sure on what you do know, which I think is super powerful. Mm. I'm going to bring up the psychologist stuff again because I feel like I'm using people as in to try and eventually get comfortable to do it. Because it's not that there's a stigma, but I just feel that I don't like going on the tram, let alone having to talk to understand the reception.
You're very comfortable talking to an Uber driver.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Mm. But the troll, are you trolling me on my own show?
It's just an interesting distinction. Yeah, exactly. I see the tram as more anonymous in a
way. No, well, I see the thing with the tram stuff is I'll always stand up because I just can't deal with trying to pick who deserves the seat more than me. Do you know what I mean?
I thought you were going to say who deserves to sit next to me and I was like, whoa, Josh.
No, it's the opposite. It's like, so it's like pregnant women, older women. Why don't we just say all women? Yeah. I'll give them a seat up to all women. And it's like, okay. And so I've just created this
old
list.
Old people.
The list is so big
that
I'm like, you know what? Like I'll just stand up and then there'll be heaps of seats and then I'm standing up and then I'm feeling self-conscious about standing up. Everyone else is sitting down. Anyway, that's not the point. The point was around the psychology stuff.
Okay.
So what are the actual – with the psychologist, what's the actual thing that you take away and do they get into the specifics? Because the thing is these psychologists, they haven't done this panel tour. They don't have the experiences that you have. So how do you then – if they say, no, you just need to do this, Cyan, how do you take that in and be like, I actually –
don't do that. Okay. That's more a coach you're talking about.
Yeah.
What
do you say? Because
they'll do like – so for me, it's more getting down into the crux of the issue. So for me, I've always been really bad at self-care and I've always been really bad at being kind to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an intense need to be liked. Mm-hmm. So I will, almost play a role with people when I don't know them that well so that they will like me, which, I mean, has a lot of payoffs. It really does. But it also means that sometimes I get super tired because I'm like, are they okay? I overthink everything. I'm like, did I offend them when I said that? Yeah. Like it's really intense in my mind. Mm-hmm. And so it's more like, okay, you know, when you find a good psychologist, it's more like a conversation around, well, why do you think you feel that way? And, why would somebody really want to be your friend when they get to know you? Can you think of the reasons? It's uncomfortable as anything. It's like anytime I've gone to see a psychologist, I've come back wrecked, just exhausted. But it filters in.
Is it? Is this something you knew before you started with the psychologist?
No, not really. It's very hard to be self-aware, and it's not like she even sat me down and went, this is my diagnosis. She was just, you know, very good at kind of coaching me through coming to that conclusion myself and asking why. Like, why would you say that about yourself? Why do you think it's so important that that every single person that you meet likes you?
Yeah.
Which
they do.
Thanks. I try really hard.
That's the problem.
Yeah,
it's an intervention. Stop being so likable.
It's hard. It's hard working on yourself. Like I feel like you're trying to work out every answer that they'll ask you. You're trying to work out what they'll ask you and what the answer will then be.
Well, the likability thing's annoying. Because what's the other option? Being unlikable. Because sometimes I think me trying to be likable is probably a good thing because it means that I do the things that I should probably be doing.
Like yourself. I think, like, doesn't that make sense? If you just liked yourself, it's like, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Sure, people will like that, and if they don't, it's okay.
Something to be said for just being kind. Yeah. Like focusing heavily on being kind, I think, is a really important thing. But yeah, I mean, I needed to get over the idea that I needed to engineer what I was saying so the psychologist would like me.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what you would do.
I think that's my basic. Well, the thing is that also.
Being they can a little see bit straight through it, guys.
Yeah, they totally know.
The thing is, I'm like, what's that first meeting?
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Nah. This is the thing. Don't think the first meeting through.
But I think that it's like, oh, I would want to go it this way. Like, I feel like, okay, I've got the direction I want to go.
But isn't that a control thing? Like, yeah, you're trying to control every element of that, control your answer, their answer, what they think of you, all of that. I think it's great. I think this is a great sign that we should book you in.
Did you know the was it a specific. When you look for one, were you like, oh, I want like a Freud, like, yeah, there's a Freud and the other one?
I think you just got to like the person. So I went to one and I did not like her, didn't go back. And what I went to another qualities? One and I was like, oh, she's just a lovely human. Mm. I think just, you know, I love people who are warm. Mm-hmm. I like people who are warm, and she was very warm and she listened, and I felt kind of, I felt safe. I think that's probably the, you know, because you get really vulnerable and you talk about like your childhood and all sorts of crap.
How quickly did they get to that? Because I think Bree was surprised when she went, they just like go there straight away.
They go, they start asking you really tough questions straight away. And I do this thing where if somebody asks, I'm good at avoidance. So I'll just go blank, and I'd literally have these times where I'd be like, I'm so sorry, I just can't process what you're asking me right now because it was just too hard. But then like 2 weeks later she'd try again and I'd be like, okay, no, I feel like I can think about this now.
I wonder,
not that anything hyper traumatic has
happened. Yeah, I know, but everyone's just got like their version of it. Yeah. I wonder, do you then feel, because you're reconciling all the things in the past or whatever, do you need to re-enter into relationships, say like with family members or whatever, and reset? Or like, because you might sometimes uncover knowledge and be like, oh, that's why I do this. It's actually because my dad's an asshole to me, or my mum does this or whatever.
Well, you establish like, that there's boundaries that are way beyond what you actually think the boundary should be. You know, what you should say no to.
Yeah, but how do you look at relationship? How do you feel like when you walked away from it, it's like, oh, you know, I'm going to speak to this person or any of that sort of shit?
No, okay. I've never, there was one conversation I did have to have, which was with somebody where I said to them, I know you don't mean it this way, but when you say this, it's made me feel this way since I was a kid. And I need you to not say it, because it just triggers me to all these other, like, it kind of, it lifts a veil on behaviours that maybe you're not even aware are going on.
There's so much subconscious. What about saying no? Have you struggled with that?
I read a book called The Life-Changing Magic of Not Giving a Fuck by Sarah Knight, and I think it is one of the best books that I've ever read, because it categorises everything into, should I actually give a fuck about this or should I not? And I've only got so many fucks to give.
That's going to be the title of the show.
That sounded really bad. But that is, that's how she phrases it.
Yeah.
You've only got like 30 in a day.
Yeah.
And if you give all of them away to stuff which isn't actually effective, stuff you care about, stuff that's going to shift the dial to you, for you, then you're not going to have enough for the stuff you do care about, your family, your kids, your partner, whatever it might be. And it was really clinical and went through every single area of my life, and I went through and I realized, wow, I'm doing all this stuff because I feel like I should, which is taking away time from doing the stuff I'm passionate about, like, you know.
What are
like,
those, some of those fucks that you don't give now?
I do a lot less speaking. I do way less speaking engagements, so I do hardly
this podcast anything. Is very rare. So, like, you don't do that many podcasts. So thank you for being here.
Oh, man, it's a pleasure. I'd never say no to you, Josh. And I've been a long-time listener, first-time caller. But I don't do much of that anymore, because I felt like it took up a huge amount of my time and energy, and I found it quite, like, intense. So I feel like, okay, now I know how to do it. I can do it well, but I only do it when I feel like, wow, it's really going to shift the dial for Hey Tiger.
Yeah.
Or Invato in some way, like really going to shift the dial.
What about being kind and this not giving a fuck approach to things? How do they align? How do you make them work? Because I really resonate with that. I want to be able to do that. But I feel like the risk that I would fall into is it feels like it's single needs based, or like I'm thinking about what is it that I want, and I'm going to just deliver on this and a few of the close people, mm-hmm. versus so many of the things that you do are having impact for so many other people.
Yeah.
So how do you identify that in the formula?
Well, the idea is not that you stop doing mm-hmm. things for people.
Yeah.
The idea is that you do things for people which are really effective and make, you know, and make meaningful sense to them. So, for instance, in the context of speaking engagements, I'll get asked to do speaking engagements because people will go, oh, she's the one woman mm. entrepreneur in tech that I know of, therefore we should ask her. Mm. So rather than saying, okay, great, I'll do that because mm-hmm. I don't want to do it, mm-hmm. I have a list of other women entrepreneurs that I give to them that I go, hey, look, I'm not available to do this, mm-hmm. but here are these 10 women you can contact. They still get a good outcome because it's not actually me that they wanted. Yeah. They wanted what I represent. The women who are just getting started in their career, you know, like in that side of themselves, their speaking and their personal brand can do it. Everyone kind of wins,
yeah.
and nobody actually loses in that. I just had to be a little bit smarter. I didn't go, no, screw you, I'm too busy.
Yeah, yeah.
So the kindness comes in, here's a solution for what you've asked
yeah.
me, what I've said no to.
Yeah.
I think we've even spoken about that within our yeah. business, which is like, hey, if we can't help someone, mm. it's okay if we can't help everyone, but it's like we can at least direct them into the right area.
Yeah.
And it's also being able to celebrate other people around you where mm. it's like, actually that person would be perfect. If they have a good, if that person then speaks at the event that you were going to speak mm-hmm. at and they do a great job, it's a win-win yeah. as well.
And I still have difficulty saying no for people. Mm-hmm. And I've got a big thing about people feeling like maybe I think I'm too good for stuff. Yeah. So I find it hard.
Do you think, I find that when I say, sometimes I'll say yes to things and then the pain that it creates based yeah. on like, oh, that thing's 3 months away or whatever. It's far enough away, so I'm going to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's yeah. like this like mm-hmm. long, long dread. Have you identified that stuff as well?
Oh, it happens to me constantly. Yeah. Now I try and imagine what it's going to be like. And a friend of mine who's actually a business coach, again, you know, using swear words again, but mm. we'll go, it's either a fuck yeah or it's a fuck no.
Yeah.
And if it's not a fuck yeah, it's automatically
yeah, yeah.
a fuck no.
Yeah,
so you've
yeah.
got to be like, oh, I am excited to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you know, like, I see the journey I've been on in my career mm-hmm. and all the mistakes and things I've said yes to mm-hmm. feel like have shaped me in some way. Mm-hmm. When do you know to have not listen to the fuck yeah?
Well, it feels like a shift, right? There's a shift from probably at the start you need to say yes, 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 yes,
yeah.
enough runs on the board to then be able to say no. If you're 19 or 18 out of school and you're saying no to everything, you're probably going to cut yourself.
I assume more opportunities will be exciting at that point. Mm. If you're asked to go speak at your high school when you're 18, you'll go, yeah. wow, yeah. I got to yeah. go speak at my high yeah. school.
That was a traumatic experience for me actually because I spoke – they didn't tell me how long to speak for.
yeah. No.
And so it was the awards night. Uh-huh. And I actually gave a $100 check to the winner of the media department, like who won uh-huh. the media award or
was
whatever.
It your check, your money?
Yeah, it was Media Flex's money. The problem is I didn't have the $100 in there. I was waiting for a client to pay me or whatever. It was like real scrappy earlier, like I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I spoke for 45 minutes, but they only needed 15. But they didn't say that. And there was the end of the talk. I'd realised I'd gone too far because a lady came up to me who was sort of would have been considered like the crazy person of the group. And she came up and she goes, don't worry what anyone else says. That was
amazing. Oh, no.
And then I look back now and the final slide that I used in the presentation was a photo of Bree and I on an elephant in Thailand. We'll get to that. It was Bree and I on an elephant in Thailand. And I was sort of like, look, you could be doing this too.
That's so
and
funny.
It wasn't even me being like funny. I was serious. I was like, travel the world, do slightly inappropriate things. Like, and then the guys Tommy pointed out, elephants have amazing memories. So they probably still remember.
He still remembers
me.
You, mate.
Yeah.
Wow.
But anyway, the tongue kissing photo.
Yeah, what is this? I've not
seen
this.
It was Facebook. When I was on Facebook, I'm off social media.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a photo, an old photo that was on Facebook of Bree and I from 2008. And it was sort of like, you know, early days or whatever, mm-hmm. 18. So it's just like us being sort of quite intimate.
Who's taking the photo?
It was me.
Selfie.
It was
like,
oh, God.
But like visible tongues. Visible tongues. Wow.
And anyway, it popped up like as
Selena
a memory.
Tagged it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It got tagged up and stuff. So then it sort of got brought to the surface. So it's not necessarily. I think. What did
it's
you?
Like 15-year-old Josh with visible tongues.
I was 18.
I was 18. I kind of think of you like a little brother. So I was like, oh goodness, no, I can't see that.
Censor that.
We'll post. We'll actually post a photo on Instagram.
I'd love that.
I've got like straight hair. Like I straightened my hair and all that.
Before we finish up, sorry, I was looking in the rabbit hole. I found this. This comment on one of your videos. And the comment says...
I never read the comments.
Says, Sai, she's the audio jungle voice.
Oh, yeah.
And something I've... This is like I've made videos, you know, before I knew Josh and having my experience with Invada, I was always hearing the audio jungle, which we've got it here.
Audio jungle.
Wait, I'm going to play it again.
Audio jungle.
People are hearing that right now. You audio can't hear it. Jungle.
And I was blown away. That's a great question. And it is you,
yes.
Is it?
Yes, it's me.
So what happened there? Like,
It was a startup and there was no one else to say it. And so I recorded myself saying audio jungle and we used that as the watermark. And since then, for whatever reason, people are so attached to it now that we have never changed it.
Well, I looked it up and it was like a specific, someone had just posted this on YouTube as just that sound effect.
Like
so
on
someone's
YouTube.
Really? The sound effect. Yeah, so it's like its own post.
Yeah. It's a that's clean so one without weird. any music or anything
oh,
like that.
Oh, that's kind of, is that
it's,
creepy?
It's slightly, it's probably, there's probably fetish vibes that we're not aware of or whatever.
Can we do, maybe put the headphones on, press and hear the recorded one and then I want you to do the real version for our show.
Okay, audio jungle.
Audio jungle.
How do you think you went?
Did it sound okay?
Mr. 97, you're on headphones. Yeah, how did it sound?
Do it, I reckon retake though.
Okay,
okay,
I'll play it first and then give it a moment.
Audio jungle.
Audio jungle.
There you go.
Was it pretty? Is it slightly like a British accent that you're doing?
I don't know. It had
that vibe.
I didn't go audio jungle. Audio. I could have.
Some
back in audio jungle.
Yeah.
Audio jungle, mate. Yeah. There's been a whole heap of people that like rip the. So that's like a watermark over the song. So you know people can't. It's for people that don't know. It's like so you can't use it in a commercial video. Mm. But it's now become a bit of a joke that like some vloggers. Rip it on purpose so they take the song but they leave the audio jungle in there
really?
Which has like more punch to the joke of like
I'm
taking off a vlogger right now and I'm using music that still has
like
the
parody video
parody so it's become a life of its own.
Every 6 months or so a business gets in touch and says can we please use the same voice that you've used for audio jungle, can you please put us in touch with her, and they have to go no actually that's the founder, that's Cyan.
But absolutely yes,
but
you
yeah,
sing, you get into the singing and stuff. Bree was saying that she my girlfriend Bree works with Cy and she was saying
hi Bree.
I'm actually glad she didn't come today because she would have been like we'll finish up in a couple of seconds but she would have been very specific
wrapping
on
up.
The timing.
She takes good care of me. Yeah. She does Hey Tigers PR.
Yeah. Mm. And so she was talking the other day about she was like humming and singing in the office and then you would do it and it would make her feel a little bit bad about herself. Because
you know what I do? Whenever she mentions your name, I go, Josh Jensen. I don't know why.
That's
I just
from
do it
our
all the time.
The Daily Talk Show opener? The old one?
No, I don't think so.
No, it's like the Goldfinger soundtrack.
Ah,
The song Goldfinger. I'll I'm not a good singer because you didn't get that at all.
No, but where does the singing come from? Was that actually something you did when you were like growing up?
I trained to be an opera singer until I was 18, yeah.
Wow.
And I was in operas and
can
stuff.
Can you do something like what?
No.
What?
Can you hit a note?
Absolutely not. This is where
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, hard no.
We're going to have to finish
get me out of here, Bruce.
I've done the audio jungle. I'm not doing anything else.
No, that's too embarrassing. I don't want to do that.
Okay, right. I sang
Josh Jansen.
That was
pretty
good.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
That's okay. Anyway, what are you excited about? Like the next 2019, Hey Tiger.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing chocolate. It's very addictive. So you can smash a block quite easily.
I didn't bring any with me. Have you guys both tried it? I'll send you some.
Yeah,
afterwards.
We have.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm glad because it's not Friday. I would
go all out.
Yeah, I would.
It is one of those ones where you really go out. Yeah. So, 2019, what does it look like? What are you excited about?
I'm really excited that Easter's going so well. Mm-hmm. So it feels like we've nailed Easter and it's flying out the door. That's exciting.
Yeah.
You know, Hey Tiger isn't profitable yet. So we need to do some, you know, like there's some hard work to get it
so how does
to
that,
where it needs to be.
How does that work? So social enterprise, there's people who are really, like for whatever reason, people get, even when you do really good things, people are always like, they're doing it for tax or whatever. Like people say this shit, right?
Yeah.
But the fact is – How is it structured? How can you make sure that you are supporting
and doing it for the right reasons?
Yep. So, look, I think the reason that happens is because some businesses say, "Yeah, we're absolutely saving the world." And all I'm saying with Hey Tiger is it's owned by a charitable trust. Mm-hmm. So I literally, I'm the director. I can't take money out of it. Mm-hmm. It needs to go to a charity. I don't take a salary. Mm-hmm. Everyone else gets paid, you know, fairly for the work that they do.
What is an actual charitable trust? What is that? Just like a technical term. What does it actually mean?
It's like a kind of a structure on top of Hey Tiger, which is called Give Tiger. Mm-hmm. And right now, like, so basically usually with a social enterprise, go, well, once we're profitable, we will donate X or Y. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do that because I thought that's weird for me to do that. Yeah. So right from the get-go, I was like, all right, we will donate 50 cents for every full bus sold and 25 cents for every mini bus sold to this, you know, to our charitable partner, to the Hunger Project.
Sure.
So baked it in right from the get-go, and I hope that we can do more than that in the future, but it seemed like something that was steady, and I fund that separately so that Hey Tiger can fulfill that responsibility before it's profitable. But then once Hey Tiger is running steady and it is making enough money itself to pay those donations itself, then it can declare a dividend. Tell me if this is getting too deep and boring.
I'm enjoying this.
It can declare a dividend, and that dividend goes up to Give Tiger, which owns Hey Tiger.
Sure.
And then Give Tiger can distribute that out to the Hunger Project, which it can only distribute it out to DGR status charities.
Okay, sure. Do you have to have, like, the Hunger Project to accept that money? Do they need to be a beneficiary of the trust or anything? Or there's nothing like it can just any charity?
No, it can be any charity. Like, we've partnered with the Hunger Project and we've committed to a minimum of $80,000 per year for the next 3 years. Sorry, I feel like I'm about to start coughing and I've drunk all my water.
Oh, no. We can get we can get 97 on that. We'll finish up.
No, don't worry. We'll be fine. So we've done that, and I can't even remember what the question you're asking me.
Yeah, so in regards to all the structure.
Now we're
going
to move on to corporations and breakdowns of
business structures.
Of IPOs. Talk to me about IPOs.
No, so what's the what is the tangible, what does it look like from a tangible level? So it's like you've got the cash. What are you actually going to be doing in those communities?
So the Hunger Project runs a really holistic program. It's everything from microloans for farmers, primarily women farmers, so that, you know, oftentimes it takes a very small amount of money. So, for instance, something that can work very well is that they might buy a cow. They might get a microloan to buy a cow. They can then sell the milk or, you know, worst case, eat the cow, or, you know, like, basically, you know, they have another revenue source if their cocoa yield is low or if something goes wrong with their cocoa, there's a drought, whatever it might be. There's HIV AIDS education, which is a really big deal because oftentimes, you know, it's a, there are very, very high rates of HIV AIDS in those areas, and family members die, and it can spread very, very easily without the right education in place. And when there's not enough people to, you know, tend farms, it can be an issue. So it all kind of, it all ties in. There's early childhood education, there's education for adults, there's education on farming practices. There is a broad array of things, but what's interesting about it is that they all, when you dive deep into it, they all work together to create this really holistic program that facilitates a community to lift themselves out of poverty on their own terms. Mm-hmm. Because a Ghanaian-led team will go into this community and they'll do that education program for, you know, like, you know, 20 animators, and then they will go out into the community and they will teach all the women about early childhood nutrition, for instance, you know, what they can be eating from the land, which will keep them all going if there is a time when they don't have the money to buy other foods. Mm-hmm. So then those women will tell other women, and they'll tell other women, and it's kind of viral.
Yeah.
So it's the best program I've come across.
That's
honestly
amazing.
Really, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It was good fun.
Yeah. Cyanide. Thank you for coming on. Hey Tiger is the chocolate brand.
Yeah. And now you've seen the face of the Audio Jungle voice.
See you tomorrow, guys. Have a good one.
See you, guys.
Thanks.